Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
All right. Good morning, everybody. And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com. Where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars. We had a great one yesterday in Naples, and lots more still ahead. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page. We hit 500 fans yesterday, 500
nice.
Likes. Automatically link to our brand-new HOA and condo blog at hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's topic, you want fights? Start putting up your Christmas decorations. That will bring out the nasty in people, believe it or not. You can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And the law firm's website, that's at condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. All right, before we start, yesterday, I have to tell you, we had a great event in Naples yesterday at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. A lot of residents and board members showed up yesterday, and it really seemed like a good time was had by all. Really, thanks to everybody who attended the course. Instead of certifying yourself by signing that silly affidavit that doesn't even require you to acknowledge that you read the Florida Condo Act or even know that it exists, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's insane, so hopefully the legislature will change that. And hopefully, though, to those of you who attended, you'd all agree, perhaps now you're a little wiser and even more understanding of the people that are on the board and have so much to deal with day in and day out. And in fact, this is interesting, lots of HOA members showed up yesterday as well. Probably a good third of the audience was from HOAs, even though they don't need to become certified as of yet. But to remind our listeners again, election season is in full swing. Florida law provides members of a condo board, you do have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. One way getting certified is by attending the Condo Craze Board Members Certification Course. It's the first course that was written by an attorney and approved by the Florida DBPR.
And that was Eric, and he has now certified 3,000 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors. The course is fun. The course is free. There is food served. You get to ask questions, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned and a really nice certificate.
That's right, Karen, and this is definitely the perfect time to come and learn about all your duties as a board member. You can learn about budgets, reserves, financial reporting, board meeting procedures, and a whole lot more. And as we said last time, we even added some information this year about making material alterations to the condo, competitive bidding for contracts, and emotional support animals. So don't miss a great you really don't want to miss this great opportunity. And if you want to see some pictures of the past seminars, Eric's put some up on the Facebook page, so you can come and check them out.
Yeah, even lots of pictures from last night. And Scott, I hate to say this, like it or not, perhaps the number one topic yesterday, were going crazy. What do you think?
I don't know.
Emotional support animals.
Wow.
Oh, man, did that take up a lot of time. But lots of angry folks up out there about whether or not people can move in with them in a no-pet community. But a number of seminars, again, that we keep teaching keeps growing. That Condo Craze van is definitely going to be putting on some miles. And this Thursday, December 6th at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're going to kick off the South Florida Cooperator Expo event at the Broward Convention Center. And the host of the event, Henry Robbins, he's going to be joining us in a little while to talk about the show. On December 15th at 10 o'clock, we'll be in Orlando at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios. And then we're back in the Hard Rock in Hollywood January 24th at 7 p.m. And finally, we'll be in West Palm Beach on February 27th at 8 o'clock in the morning at the PM Expo event at the West Palm Beach Fairgrounds. So really, we're going to be all around the state. And if you want to register, for either the this coming Thursday, the South Florida Cooperator, the Orlando one, Holiday, Hollywood, West Palm Beach, wherever you're going to be, just go to the show's website, condorcrazeandhoas.com, fill out the form, and Brian, our office manager, will notify you that you are, in fact, registered.
Well, last show we spoke about things that both condo and HOA owners should be thankful for, and the fact that foreclosure crisis may be slowly but surely coming to an end, an association's right to ban pit bulls in their community, and a New York management company who took many Florida associations for a lot of money. But the good news is that the owner is going to federal prison for a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I want to start off today, Karen, by sharing an interesting email from a listener who asked that I don't reveal her name. She doesn't want everybody out there to know that she actually called in with this question or wrote in with this question. But she lives in a 55 and over community, and her community sued an owner who allowed small children to reside in the unit in violation of the governing documents. And the association wound up suing, and they prevailed in court. And the owner was now forced to remove the children as per court order.
Yeah, this is always a rough situation, but it does happen. And, you know, the problem is the association thinks sometimes that without notice to the defendant, the board has the right to somehow enter someone's home to see if the owner has complied with the court order and remove the children. So, you know, we had to kind of tell this person, and we had to make it clear to them that without an order, the court order being really specific about what needs to be done, the board does not have the authority to go in. And in fact, they can only go in if the statute allows it.
Right, exactly. This comes up all the time. When can a board enter a unit? And in fact, here is what the condo statute actually says. It's called the right of access to units. The association has the irrevocable right of access to each unit during reasonable hours when necessary for the maintenance, repair, or replacement of any common elements or any portion of a unit to be maintained by the association pursuant to the declaration or is necessary to prevent damage to the common elements or to a unit or units.
Yeah,
very specific.
Yeah, and children do not fall under any of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's say, for example, that the board knows that like there's a flood in the unit. There's no problem going in without notice, especially if the people aren't there to stop the flood. But other than for the maintenance and to prevent damage, the board does not have a right to enter someone's home for any other purpose. And it's trespassing if they go in.
Yeah, absolutely. The statute, again, pretty clear, pretty unambiguous, and over the years, though, I got to say I've known quite a few boards who suddenly smell like gas leaks coming from a unit and think it's okay to enter the unit to stop the gas leak. The funny thing is sometimes they smell gas leaking from a unit even if the unit has no gas hookup and only has electric. Go figure. And those in a condo will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I know a lot of associations also have a requirement that owners of a condominium unit have to leave a key to their unit in the association's office at all times. Can the association really make you do that?
Oh, boy, they can. And I got to tell you, I must have been asked this question 1,000 times over the last 20 years. And the answer as to whether or not an owner has to leave a key to the unit is a resounding yes. If the association's governing documents contain a provision that requires the owners to provide a key to their unit, that owner better leave that key to the unit or they can be sued, and a relatively small problem can turn into a big, expensive problem for that unit owner very quickly.
Yeah, we've actually had to do that a couple of times. And, you know, we've always relied on the decisions of the arbitrators in the courts. And arbitrators have issued a lot of opinions in this area of the law. And here's basically what almost all of the cases say. A key may be required because the right of access is for the protection of all units within a building. And the owner of one unit may not be available to give permission at the time of an emergency. A common type of emergency occurs when a plumbing leak in one unit causes damage to another unit or to the common elements.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. Arbitrators are pretty clear. And in fact, arbitrators have even entered orders not only requiring owners to provide keys to the locks, but even requiring the owner to provide the condominium association with the actual alarm codes if the unit owner wound up installing an alarm on their front door.
Wow.
They got to give that up, too.
But suppose an owner is convinced that if he gives a key to their unit to the board, someone is going to break into their house and steal stuff from them. Or they've been fighting with the board for 10 years and they simply can't trust the board with a key.
I can tell you this. There is basically no defense. Arbitration cases have rejected numerous defenses, including whether the association will or will not access that unit in a manner that's satisfactory to the owner. And additionally, the defense that unit owners claim that property was stolen or their property was damaged, it was used or disarranged by persons that were gaining entry with the key, that's also been found insufficient by the arbitrators. And check this one out. Even a claim that the owner keeps national defense secrets unsecured in his unit, that was rejected as well. Yeah, believe it or not. And there really is no defense to not providing a key if the documents require it, or even if the board adopts a rule that requires it. Got to give up the key. Let's do this. Let's go to our first break. And when we get back, I'm going to tell a personal story about someone in my family who wound up leaving a key with the unit, with the office downstairs, and wound up paying a price for it.
Oh,
of course,
boy.
We'll take your calls on anything and everything else going on in the condo and HOA world. 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The phone number to call is 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. On that note, how about we go to John in Broward County? How are you, John?
Hey, good morning, guys. Enjoying the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Got a quick question that was brought up by one of your recent comments about whether somebody could access the apartment for various reasons, and the national security documents comment made me kind of laugh. I'm sure other people laugh as well.
Right.
We're not supposed to be in an apartment anyway. But that said, I'm
oh, yeah, I wonder if that's Petraeus' defense who was denied. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I don't think he would, whoever that is, would want to actually list that on his security bio.
Yeah, right.
Kind of work in that field. Anyway, I'm a board member in Miami, and I have looked over the paperwork that we've had for condo rules and restrictions. It's very, very old. It's over 20 years old, and it's very ambiguous language. But is there anything on the books that we can reference that's already done about tenant restrictions, things they can do, can't do, aka it's a nice place, but you never know who you're going to get. You know, setting campfires in the backyard, storing drugs, things of that nature. Are there ways, things that are already set up that we can access, or do we have to go make those up on our own?
Okay, a couple of things. There's in every declaration of condominium, there's nuisance provisions, right, which basically says regardless of whether or not it's an owner or a tenant, the no unit can be used in a manner that's noxious or offensive. You can certainly make reasonable rules regarding the use of the common areas as well, right? So those are things that generally apply to both unit owners and tenants. Also, you can ask tenants if you're allowed renting in the community, like you say. You can make tenants post a security deposit if they cause damage to the common elements, which would equal 1 month's rent. You can do that. So, yes, there are things at the association's disposal that they can rely on to prevent not only tenants but owners as well from causing any damage to the common elements or to units themselves. And by the way, the Florida statute is pretty clear. The provisions of your declaration of condominium and your bylaws, your governing documents, automatically apply to any tenant who winds up renting a unit in the property.
Yeah. So I have a hearing with on Wednesday. Better think about that.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure there was nothing missing where they could say, hey, we weren't told we could do X, Y, Z.
Well, one other thing that the arbitration decisions have allowed associations in a sense to discriminate against tenants about is to say that owners can have pets, tenants can't. Arbitrators have allowed a difference between the two. So other than what I said generally, you have provisions that apply to both. There's an exception basically carved out for pets. The associations allow the arbitrators have allowed associations to discriminate against tenants when it comes to pets as well. Okay?
Okay.
But those exist, no problem. And if any of those provisions are, in fact, broken, you can go to either arbitration, probably, or a court of law to get them enforced. Okay?
Very good.
All right, John. Thanks for the phone call. Bye-bye. You too. All right, how about we go to Elizabeth in Lake Worth?
Good afternoon to all of you. I would like your expert opinion on reserves as regards an HOA. Due to a shortfall in the operating account and in order to pay our bills, our HOA board voted to stop funding the reserves for the last 3 months of 2012. Is this permitted under state statute?
How were the reserves originally established, Elizabeth? Do you know, did the unit owners vote in favor of the reserves originally?
It's my understanding that there were none have been found, turned over from the developer to the association at that time. So they've all been applied by successive boards.
Okay. So here's my understanding of the statute. If the unit owners at one time voted, and they can do this by a majority vote, to have reserves included in the budget, the only way reserves can't be included in the budget from that point forward is if the unit owners themselves voted to waive the funding of reserves. But if they never voted for it to begin with, then the board would not have to include reserves in the budget, even if it was in there previously. So the test that you need to look at is whether or not how those reserves get into the budget in the first place. If it was done by a unit owner vote in an HOA, then once the unit owners take that vote, it's got to be included in the budget going forward for successive years, okay? No matter what.
Thank you.
Oh, so that,
thank
that
you very much.
No problem. That's your homework, though, Elizabeth, all right?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. All right, before we went to the break, we were talking about whether or not unit owners have to leave keys to their unit with the office downstairs, and it always winds up in a lot of fights, a lot of controversies. A lot of people just not feeling secure in leaving that key to their unit with management for whatever reasons. Karen, as you said before, maybe it's because they've been having an ongoing dispute with the board for the last 5, 10, or 30 years or so. Or maybe it's because they just don't feel key is going to be kept secure.
Maybe they're just embarrassed because they have a messy apartment.
That could be, too. Now, here's a great personal story that involves my sister, and it might give credence to some of these people's thoughts. Now, my sister lives in a condo in Aventura. We will not name it. And her condo required that all of the owners provide a key, drop it off downstairs with the main office. And she complies. She leaves that key. And one day the maintenance guy needs to get into her unit, and he rightfully accessed her keys that were kept in the lockbox downstairs in the main office. No problem. But the problem does come in that when he was done accessing the unit, he didn't put the key back in that lockbox.
No.
Instead, what does this guy do? He takes the key and he puts it in the top drawer of his own desk. Now, this is going to sound nuts, but my sister goes to work one day. She comes home, and you kind of get that feeling that like a pillow or two is kind of out of place on the couch. You know something's right, but you don't think anything of it, really. You kind of overlook it. Problem is, the next day, the same thing happens. But of course, you think it's impossible that someone simply broke in and their whole object was to move pillows around. So you kind of let it go day two as well. Well, the third day, she comes home, she goes to her freezer, and believe it or not, one of her Weight Watchers meals is missing.
The hell is going on?
From her freezer. You can't make this up, right? And now she's really concerned, still doesn't freak out about it. On day four, she comes home, though, and there's a half-eaten apple on the kitchen counter. Now, of course, that freaks her out, so she runs out the door and calls the Aventura Police Department, and almost immediately, the Aventura Police, they determine that the key to the unit, guess what? It was not kept secure, and in fact, the keys of several unit owners weren't kept secure, and this not only happened to my sister at the time, but a few other people in the building, and turns out, unfortunately, some kid with a drug problem winds up getting access to the keys.
Wow.
But check this out. Amazingly enough, the kid didn't steal anything. He just was going into these homes and wanted a place to hang out during the day. The kid didn't really bother anybody, just broke it. Well,
he
did take a Weight Watchers meals, right, right.
Meals, yeah.
Well, so people who claim that they don't trust the board to keep the key safe might be right after all. Your sister's case proves it.
Yeah, and that's true, Karen. They certainly may be right, but unless, you know, they're going to be able to prove in advance that the keys won't be kept secure, and really that's kind of impossible. Again, really no excuse, and it could wind up costing you, unit owner, a lot of money in arbitration fees and costs and attorney's fees, and does not make sense to fight your board on it because you will lose the case and it will cost you big time. But on that note, I see we have Henry Robbins on the line, but let's do this. Let's go to the bottom of the hour break so we have some real time to spend with Henry. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-85. We'll not only talk to Henry after the break, but we'll talk about screening, rejecting, the right of first refusal. And, of course, again, we'll take your calls on anything and everything in the condo and HOA world, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call if you have any questions about your condo or HOA, 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585.
All right. As we mentioned earlier in the show, this coming Thursday at the Broward County Convention Center is the South Florida 2012 Condo HOA and Co-op Expo. And the Condo Craze Board Certification Seminar starts it off at 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be teaching our board certification course. And when that course is done, there's going to be lots of treats in store for everybody that attends. And to tell us more about it is Henry Robbins, president of the South Florida Cooperator and the coordinator of what's going to be a great event. Henry, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, Eric. How are you?
All right. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate your time. Love to hear that Brooklyn accent, by the way. Just makes me feel right at home. You know what I mean?
There you go.
All right. Hey, tell our listeners, Henry, about just how many exhibitors are going to be at the expo, what kind of services they're going to be offering, and how everybody who goes there is just going to benefit big time.
Well, first of all, the show itself will be the largest community association trade show run in the entire state of Florida. We've got over 227 exhibitors currently, and the services range everything from asbestos abatement to window replacement, you name it. I mean, it reads like a who's who,
right,
of, you know, exhibitors.
So if I need lawyers, there's going to be lawyers there. If my association needs plumbers, there's going to be plumbers there. If I need swimming pool repair, there's going to be people to do that. I mean, basically, all the bases are going to be covered, I take it.
Absolutely. Awnings, air ducts, environmental, you know, water damage, cable, internet, and phone agreement consultants.
Fantastic.
Cleaning, collections, you name it.
Fantastic. All right. Now, in addition to everybody being able to meet with all of the exhibitors and get information about all their products and services, I know that there's also going to be some educational-type seminars as well. Tell us a little about what else is going to be offered.
We have four events during the day, only four. They're starting at 10:30. The first one is the top five things managers wish boards knew, sponsored by Associa. The second one is Condominium Association Construction Projects Gone Wild, sponsored by Becca Polakoff. Then we've got Navigating the Claims Process, sponsored by the East Coast Public Adjusters. And the last one is Collecting Common Fees and Enforcing Rules and Regulations, which is sponsored by us. So those are the only four seminars during the day. The rest of the show is a pure trade show.
Right, gotcha. And, of course, yeah, we're kicking it off at 8 o'clock with the board certification course. And if people want to wind up taking, you know, our course and a whole bunch of courses throughout the day and walk the floor, I think they're going to wind up having a great time. And I also see that people who attend are going to have a great opportunity also to win lots of door prizes. And one lucky association I see is going to win lots of money for their reserve account. Tell us about that.
Well, what we do is, in all our shows, you know, a little background that the listeners should realize is we, the Cooperative brand, produce the same show in New York, New Jersey, New England, and Chicago. So we're in the trade show business in a big way. But one association will win a $2,500 check to their reserve fund.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I know, as you were saying, you have these types of events not only here in Florida, but really all throughout the country. And I know you wouldn't be doing it unless it was obvious that people really enjoy attending these events. They get a lot out of it. And I'm expecting a great turnout. What do you think?
Well, so far, I tell you, Eric, we've got 1,400 people pre-registered for the show, and that doesn't even include the exhibitors. So I can tell you almost emphatically it will be the largest attended show ever seen in South Florida. That I can almost promise
you. I, for one, am definitely looking forward to this Thursday. I think it's going to be a great event. And how can our listeners learn more about the expo? How can they register?
They're very simple. They go to FloridaCondoExpo.com. Again, FloridaCondoExpo.com.
All right, Henry, I look forward to meeting you Wednesday night. I certainly look forward to seeing you on Thursday. Thanks for calling in this morning. Thanks for being a guest on the show. And believe me when I tell you, I'm sure lots of our listeners are going to be there on Thursday.
Great. Just don't forget, FloridaCondoExpo.com. Thanks, Eric.
You
see
got
you Wednesday
it.
Night.
Thank you, Henry. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. I'm actually really looking forward to Thursday. On that note, Cynthia from Lauderhill has been holding a long time. Cynthia, thanks for holding.
No problem.
How can we help you?
I want to know, what can a condo owner do when the board won't enforce its rules?
What can the board do? It's interesting because it's actually a good article in the paper this week about whether or not a condo must enforce their rules or whether they may enforce their rules. And it depends actually what the bylaws say. And there's actually a District Court of Appeal opinion that's out on this very topic. Give us an example as to how you're being harmed by the association not enforcing their rules.
Okay, people have moved in over me, and they have children all day, all night, running over my... It's constant noise in my condo now.
Right.
And we have a rule that says, you know, there is a rule and regulations that I received when I moved in 98, that I'm assuming everybody's getting, that deals with noise.
Right.
And I can't get anybody to deal with this family about this noise. So I live like what sounds like in a bass drum all day and all night.
All right. Do you know what kind of flooring they have upstairs and whether or not that flooring that they have upstairs requires some soundproofing underneath it that might not be there?
Yeah, they have linoleum, because I knew the owner who owned the place before. And when she first put it in, I got noise, and then we realized what was going on. The owner that they bought from put that linoleum stuff down.
Right.
And did not put padding in between.
Ah, there you go. So, potentially what you may want to do, you know, different ways to go. If your board won't help you, you can call up your local building department and find out if there's a requirement that there's soundproofing be installed under the linoleum. If not, the building department may in fact force that upstairs owner to put down some soundproofing, lift up the floor and put down some soundproofing. If they won't do it, then it's going to be up to you perhaps to go to court or to an arbitration proceeding. No, it would be court because it's between two different owners, and you'd have to prove to a court, a judge, that the unit upstairs is being a nuisance to you or creating a nuisance. And oftentimes that's difficult to prove. You got to go in with sound recordings or, you know, audio-visual recordings. But I'd start with the building department and see what they say, see how they can help you out.
Okay, even though they weren't the owners that put the flooring down?
Doesn't matter. If the unit is in non-compliance with the local building department rules and regulations, then they would have to come into compliance. Okay?
Okay.
All right,
Cynthia. Thanks so much, and I will see you on Thursday,
All
actually.
Right, that's fantastic. Look forward to seeing you. Stop by our booth, Cynthia.
Okay. Bye-bye.
How about we go to John in Pompano Beach?
Hello.
How are you, John?
Oh, I'm well. Good to listen to you guys
once again.
I've got several quick questions. One of them is a board member that has a pet in a no pet association. The same gentleman who interviews prospective tenants and tells them no pets allowed.
Right.
The board, being aware of this, and one of the previous board members, she resigned last year, she actually made one of the tenants remove a bird, knowing full well that the other board member has a pet. So this was touched on an email with one of the board members last week, and what the board member told me in reply to the email is that the gentleman claims he was told that he could have the pet by a previous board member, and that lady is now deceased, and that board member tells me, well, there's no way to verify. And I simply wrote back. I said, well, how can you give me that kind of an answer? I said, you know, you're a board member, and once you find out that anyone has a illegal pet, the board should act immediately in removing that pet.
Absolutely.
A board member cannot, as far as I know, authorize anyone to, or give permission to anyone to give a pet.
Right. You know, that not only comes up in the concept of pets, it comes up in the concept of making alterations or changes to the outside of your unit. Scott litigated a case about, I don't know, 2 years ago, where the court made it clear that if your documents require permission to be obtained from the board in writing, oral approval from a member of the board means absolutely nothing, okay, even if it's from the developer at the time. So you have a situation here where there's a board member with a pet. Scott, have you been involved in anything like that?
Yeah, I have, actually. and if the board, I mean, remember, there are no special exemptions unless it's protected by the law, like if the person has a handicap. If somebody's just allowed to have a pet, well, unfortunately, everybody's allowed to have a pet.
Yeah, if you're going to allow in one, you're going to allow that board member to go after anybody else would be called selective enforcement, and it could wind up getting the board in big trouble. And I can tell you I've seen lots of associations lose cases on selective enforcement grounds, and the association could wind up losing and paying that owner's attorney's fees and court costs as well. Okay, so no, there are no exceptions for a board member. Even if that board member comes forward and says, well, someone who died and was on the board X number of years ago told me I can have it.
Yeah.
It's not a genuine argument. Hey, it's not a genuine defense.
Hey, Eric, the guy at the car dealership who just died said he actually sold me your catalog.
Right. All right, but thanks for the call,
well,
John. Yeah.
Listen, can I ask one more question?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, what are the limitations of an authorized representative? I mean, not being able to serve on the board, of course, and not being able to vote. Can he attend meetings and speak on the behalf
of the owner?
Interesting,
because the only time authorized representative or the term authorized agent is used in the statute is when is in the access to record statute. In other words, if a unit owner, let's say, lives out of state and can't come to the association to get access to records, they can say, okay, I'm appointing my next-door neighbor, Joe or Bob, as my authorized representative to go get the records for me. Other than that, there's absolutely nothing in the statute that talks about what an authorized agent or an authorized representative means. But it does not mean that that person has a right to attend board meetings for you, because the statute, at least in the condo setting, is very clear. Only owners have a right to attend the meeting, so it does not apply to board meetings. Okay, John?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Let's take our final break of the hour, and we'll be back right after this.
Back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Give us a call, 877-850-8585. The number is 877-850-8585.
All right. Let's go back to where we left off at the beginning of the show. There is no question that one of the subjects I get most often asked about is whether or not the board has the right to actually reject an applicant for either a rental or for a purchase in the community. And it would be great if there was some kind of guidance, some statute out there, some rule that I can point them to, and basically tells them what type of criteria can be used when determining whether or not to approve an applicant. But I got to tell you, there really is almost nothing to point to at all, and it's another good example of just how poorly drafted some of our community association statutes are. They are terrible in that regard.
Yeah, Eric, the only real mention of screening in the Florida Condo Act says, no charge shall be made by the association or any body thereof in connection with the sale, mortgage, lease, sublease, or other transfer of a unit unless the association is required to approve such transfer and a fee for such approval is provided for in the declaration, articles, or bylaws. Any such fee may be preset, but in no event may such fee exceed need $100 per applicant other than husband or wife or parent slash dependent child, which are considered one application.
Right. That's it. So that's the bottom line. That's what the statute tells you in terms of screening and rejecting. So bottom line, the first step, you have to determine whether or not your governing documents allow the association to approve or disapprove of that transfer. That's the first crucial step. And many associations, I know, Scott, you and I see this all the time, they incorrectly believe that they either somehow have this inherent right to approve sales or disapprove sales or leases, or that they have the right because their governing documents say that they have that right. But oftentimes they are wrong. The board is wrong. The association is wrong. And they don't have the right to screen, eject, reject, or approve. But what they do have is only a right of first refusal. And that only allows the association the opportunity to purchase or lease that unit on the same terms that that owner is offering to that new buyer or that new lessee. And to be clear, that does not equate to the association having the right to screen or reject an applicant for purchase of a lease. It's something totally different.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's assume that an association has the right to screen and reject an applicant. Do the documents have to come up with criteria that the board must go by?
And this is funny because you would, again, hope that the statute gave you some criteria to go by. And it's a great question, Karen. But even if the governing documents allow the association the opportunity to screen and reject those proposed purchasers and the proposed tenants, the documents still can be invalid as an illegal restraint on that owner's ability to sell or lease or alienate their property. And we need to talk real quickly about a case called Aquarian Foundation versus Shalom House. It was a case decided by the Third District Court of Appeal involving a Dade County condominium in 1984. And in that case, the court held that since that declaration of condominium permitted that association to reject perpetually any owner's purchaser for any reason or for no reason, it was obvious and an absolute restraint on alienation. And the only way that clause can be saved from being invalid is if the association also had a corresponding obligation to purchase that unit or procure a purchase of that unit from that owner at its fair market value. Now, the court in that case said, otherwise stated, if the association is empowered to act arbitrarily, capriciously, and unreasonably in rejecting a unit owner's prospective purchaser, it must in turn be accountable to that owner by offering payment or a substitute market for that property. So yeah, they can't just be a blanket statement in your declaration that says the board has a right to reject for no reason at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, Eric, the court's just reiterating the fact that restrictions on a unit owner's right to transfer his property are recognized as a valid means of ensuring the association's ability to control the composition of the condominium as a whole. I don't know, assuming your documents give the association the ability to screen and reject for cause, the board better have a reasonable criteria in place, which they will use to prove that they are rejecting an applicant for cause.
Yeah, the question is, though, what is the cause that most associations use? What kind of criteria can you put in place? And again, you almost won't find any guidance whatsoever in the statutes and arbitration decisions. But here's basically the four criteria that the board should use when determining whether or not to approve an applicant. Number one, you can certainly look at their credit score. And you can have strict guidelines. For example, have no problem if you had provisions in place. And I'd like to see it in your declaration of condominium rather than a board rule that says an applicant must have a minimum credit score or they are rejected. You can certainly use criminal history as a way of screening applicants. But again, have strict guidelines. For example, put in your governing documents that persons will be rejected as either a lessee or a purchaser if they have been convicted previously of a felony. You can put in there an applicant's prior history of foreclosures or evictions as another criteria to reject them. For example, if they've had, other situations where they lived in condos and they were foreclosed upon or they were tenants in a property and there were a bunch of evictions, certainly that's criteria you can use as well. And the other one that's most often cited to or most often the attorneys in this area agree can be used, of course, is if the applicant would automatically violate the governing documents by moving in. For example, in a 55 and over community, the applicant makes it clear that that unit is not going to be occupied by at least one person age 55 or older. That, you know, right off the bat, they violate that. So again, that's the criteria that the board should adopt and use. Again, you can use credit score, you can use criminal history, you can use a prior history of foreclosures and evictions, and the fact documents would be violated right off the bat. But boards, take note, you know, failure to apply this criteria even-handedly across the board can get the association sued for tortious interference with contract, and they can also face claims for discrimination. I'm telling you, have these strict procedures and guidelines in place. They should be properly adopted. They should be published. And again, these decisions, if you're asked to prove it up, you should need to and have the ability to document them.
Yeah, so before we go off there, let's recap this, Eric. If the docs allow the board to reject without having to have any cause whatsoever, that restriction will not be upheld unless the board has the corresponding obligation to purchase the unit on the same terms or find a buyer on the same terms.
Yeah, and a lot of associations don't realize that, but it looks like we are at the end of yet another week. Of course, automatically, any Heat fans or Dolphin fans, you can be rejected right off the bat. The statute says so. All right, guys, have a great week. Thanks for tuning into another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. See you same time next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks.
And see you Thursday.